Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We'll be resuming in Volume 60, Number 1, the Fall 2020 issue, Where We Live, Architecture and Historic Preservation. This magazine is provided by and produced by the North Carolina Museum of History. And we're going to read first The Steps, National Register of Historic Places Nomination Process by Jennifer Bros. You cannot stop time. North Carolina continues to change, but you can change a bridge to carry key pieces of our past that teach valuable history lessons into our future. Do you know about a place that might have an important history? Do you want to honor it with special recognition and encourage others to take care of it for the future? The National Register of Historic Places might be the right fit. The National Register of Historic Places is a federal program of the National Park Service. It is the official list of the nation's top historic places to preserve. Most places nominated for the National Register are chosen for their contribution to local history. All kinds of things can be listed on the National Register of Historic Places: buildings, sites, structures, objects, and districts. Yates Mill, built in 1756, served Wake County as a water-powered grist mill for more than 200 years. It was added to the National Register in 1970. Today, it is the centerpiece of historic Yates Mill County Park. Learn more at wakegov.com/parks/Yates Mill, YATESMILL. Did you know that you can explore the State Preservation Office's data on a map? Check out HPOWEB, Historic Preservation Office Web, HPO Web, at www.ncdcr.gov/about/history/division-historical-resources/gis-maps-and-data. I'll repeat that. www.ncdcr.gov/about/history/division-historical-resources/gis-maps-and-data. Here's a short biography of the author, Jennifer Bros. She grew up in rural southern Illinois, curious about old buildings. Compelled to explore the past, she studied historic preservation in Missouri and Indiana, worked as a preservation consultant in Indiana, and worked for a decade at the State Historic Preservation Office in South Dakota. She is currently National Register Coordinator for the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office. She recently learned that her direct descendants lived on the Forsyth-Davidson County line in the early 1800s. Now, here are the steps for nomination. First, contact the State Historic Preservation Office. Ask what they might already know about a property and whether it might be a good fit for the National Register program. If it's a good fit, go to step two. Fill out the study list application. Find out if the North Carolina National Register Advisory Committee thinks the property might be eligible. Fill out a study list application and turn it into the State Historic Preservation Office. After the State Committee places the property on the North Carolina study list, go to step three. Write the National Register nomination. First, check with the private property owner for permission. Then write the National Register nomination. This is your chance to argue why the place is important and deserves National Register recognition. The State Historic Preservation Office reviews all state nominations and gives authors tips to make sure it has its best chance of success. After the nomination is complete, go to step 4. Present nomination to state committee. After State Historic Preservation Office sends letters to property owners and local officials, a nomination is presented to the North Carolina National Register Advisory Committee. If the committee thinks it meets the requirements, the State Historic Preservation Officer signs it. After the state recommends yes, go to step 5. Submit nomination to Washington, D.C. The State Historic Preservation Office submits the nomination to the Keeper of the National Register, the United States Department of the Interior in Washington, D.C. Within 45 days, the National Park Service will share its decision on whether it is officially listed in the National Register of Historic Places. If it is listed, go to step 6. Celebrate National Register listing. Congratulations. The state sends the owner a certificate. If you want, you can publicize the news and even invite the community to a fun planned event. And remember, the State Historic Preservation Office is always here to help. Next, a couple of activities just for fun. The first one is an architectural scavenger hunt. We've learned a lot about architecture in this issue. Now let's have some fun. Here is a page of architectural details. Make a copy and then go on a scavenger hunt. You can do it as a club activity. You can take it with you the next time your family goes on a drive, or just take a walk in your neighborhood and see what you can find. But you don't have to wait. You can even go on a scavenger hunt in this magazine. Try it. The first category is building plans and sizes. The plans are square, rectangle, L-shaped, and irregular, and the sizes are one story, two story, split level, and tall building. There are four types of roof: gable, gambrel, asymmetrical, and pyramidal. 7 foundations and chimneys: no foundation, low stone, raised, high brick. As far as chimneys, side, interior, and front. Lots of windows: casement, 1x1, 6x6, craftsman, bay window, Palladian window, circular, arch, Gothic arch, tripart, and Queen Anne. 4 kinds of columns: Doric, Ionic, Corinthian, and Victorian. And 7 building materials: fieldstone, smooth cut stone, shingles, stucco, brick, all stretcher, logs, wood or vinyl siding. The second activity is look at that. North Carolina is full of interesting buildings. Which of these is your favorite? Try this. Design your fantasy house. Get ideas from this page or other houses in this magazine. Will yours be cozy and historic or out of this world? And there are 6 photographs of interesting buildings, and they are the Nissen Building, built in 1927, one of the earliest skyscrapers in Winston-Salem, Forsyth County, and the first air-conditioned building in the Southeast. 2. One of the few Shell Oil clamshell gas stations remaining in the United States. It is also in Winston-Salem in Forsyth County, circa 1930s. 3. The Futuro House, circa 1960s, in Frisco in Dare County. One of about 100 prefabricated house kits designed by Finnish architect Matti Suuronen in 1968. 4. A mid-century modern house in Chapel Hill, Orange County, designed by George Matsumoto, circa 1950s. 5. Biltmore House in Asheville, George Vanderbilt's 250-room French Renaissance chateau built between 1889 and 1895. And 6, Body Island Lighthouse and Keeper's Quarters, just south of Nag's Head in Deer County. Next, from the editor, Kathy East. What do you think? Do you remember what Dorothy said at the end of The Wizard of Oz? She closed her eyes, hugged her little dog Toto, and whispered, "There's no place like home." As I write in 2020, I know one thing's for sure. We are all spending lots more time at home, thanks to the virus COVID-19. So maybe it is a good time to have an issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian about the homes and other buildings in our lives. I've lived and worked in all kinds of structures, ranch houses, apartment buildings, an office once on the 27th floor of a skyscraper. Today, I work at the North Carolina Museum of History's building in Raleigh, though right now, I'm teleworking from my apartment in a cool 100-year-old house. Skyscrapers are going up all around us in downtown Raleigh, but this neighborhood is still here because of historic preservation. But my favorite house is from childhood. You can see it in the background of this photo of my grandmother. The caption with that photograph is, "Growing up, I loved visiting my grandmother, Marcella Huff Pugh, and her house with a red tin roof. Everyone in our huge family called it the home place, where we all returned for holidays and family reunions. It was part of my family's history. What's yours?" It was built on a hill around 1900. Overhead was a red tin roof that could turn an evening rain into a lullaby. Below was a cool, dark, brick-lined cellar filled with granddaddy longlegs, and shelves filled with homemade jams and jellies, green beans and corn that my grandmother grew and canned herself. There were outbuildings, too, a chicken coop, where she showed me how to slip my little hands under fat, fussy hens to gather eggs. A barn for the cows and horses that grazed on the hillside. By summer, that fledgling garden in the photo would be filled all the way down the hill with every flower you could imagine. We never left her house without a big hug and a tiny bouquet of flowers. You can barely see the front porch on the right of the photo, but we never went in that way anyway. That was the fancy formal entry, which led to a parlor, which back then was reserved for company and preacher visits. We always went in and out of the side door you can see on the left. It led right into the friendly kitchen. I'd love to go visit that house this weekend, but I can't. It's gone. My grandparents passed away when I was 9. The house stayed in the family for a while, but it was eventually sold. And eventually one of those new owners decided to tear it down. So now I can only visit my favorite house in my memories. Memories are one good way to preserve history. But when it comes to houses, even better is the work of historic preservationists. We've learned a lot in this issue about what they do and why it's important. On page 6, author Elizabeth C. King explains that historic houses help us remember ordinary history that people don't always think is important enough to write down. So this year I challenge you, let all become architectural historians. And let's write down some of that ordinary history. Study the house or apartment that you live in, or maybe the house of a relative that you love. Use this issue to help you study the architecture. Ask questions like, when was it built? Who built it and why? Ask about the people who have lived there. Write it down. They say home is where the heart is, but we historians know home is also where the history is. Explore yours. Next, a big thank you. The North Carolina Museum of History and the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association would like to thank the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office for their generous support of Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine. Here's more about what they do. Authorized by the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, the North Carolina State Historic Preservation Office is the official state agency for historic preservation in North Carolina. We work in cooperation with the National Park Service and multitudes of private and public partners to accomplish the Act's purposes as well as state statutory mandates. Our mission is to help the state's citizens, private organizations, and public agencies identify, protect, and enhance North Carolina's historic resources and communities through this coordinated program of incentives and technical assistance for today and future generations. Our vision is that North Carolina citizens, with their diversity of backgrounds, roles, and aspirations, work together to support this work, which provides deep roots to support future development, help us understand better ourselves and others, and offer a sustainable tool to ensure stewardship of our state's history, economic growth, and a better future. This publication project has been financed in part with federal funds from the National Park Service, United States Department of Interior. However, the contents and opinions do not necessarily reflect views or policies of the United States Department of the Interior, nor does it mention the trade names, commercial products, or organizations, or neither does the mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations constitute endorsement or recommendation by the Department of the Interior. The North Carolina Museum of History and the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association would also like to thank the Breitmeyer Foundation for their generous support of this issue of the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine. And there are three photographs accompanying this. The first caption is, State Historic Preservation Staff Really Get Into Their Work. They're actually standing inside of a frame of a building that's being moved. The second picture is Jeff Adelson leads a tour for the Rosenwald Conference, and the third photograph is some of the staff on the steps of the Redmond Shackelford House. Reed Thomas, Stan Little, Beth King, Bill Garrett, Scott Power, and John Wood, Andy Edmonds and Christy Brantley, Annie McDonald, Sarah Woodard David, Jen Bros, and Hannah Beckman Black. On the back cover of the issue, what's that? Did you know that old houses often hide interesting secrets within their walls? Look closely at this curved piece of wood in the upper right-hand corner of the photo. Can you guess what it is? A, an old piece of firewood. B, a ship's knee. C, an old table leg. Or D, an ordinary piece of wood, silly. Correct answer is B, it's a ship's knee. In the 18th and 19th centuries, boat builders used curved pieces of aged live oak trees to brace the ship's hull against the pounding seas. Can you guess why they were called knees? This repurposed ship's knee was discovered in North Carolina's oldest dated house, concealed under wall paneling. The knee still has the pine tar staining on the underside and vacant nail holes from when it was once attached on a knee brace in a ship. And now I'll be reading from the Spring 2021 issue, Volume 60, Number 2, Making a Living, North Carolina Industries Over Time. And we'll begin with, Hey Y'all, from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Program Coordinator, Jessica Pratt. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. When I first heard the term the Big Three, I was proud to know that my North Carolina roots were reflected in those words. The Big Three refers to tobacco, textiles, and furniture, the three main industries that North Carolina has historically been known for. My father's family worked in textile mills in Rutherford County. My mother's family farmed tobacco and other crops in southern Guilford County. Even in my lifetime, I've seen changes in these industries, such as the closing of the mills in the town where my great-grandparents lived and that many relatives had worked in, and the 2004 tobacco quota buyout legislation that signaled the end of tobacco production on the family farm that my uncles ran. But along with changes to the Big Three, North Carolina has also seen new industries develop and make a name for our state in recent years. You'll learn more about those in the issue ahead. What do you think the top industries for our state will be when you are grown and ready to enter the workforce? 100 years from now, will there be a new Big Three? This is accompanied by a photograph, and the caption is, "Another member of my family who witnessed many industry changes was my great-great-grandmother, Hester Humphreys. She was born in Cliffside, a North Carolina mill town, in 1884, and went to work in the local textile mills at age 8. According to family stories, she had to stand on a box to reach the machines. She finally retired from Cliffside Mill when she was 69 years old. The picture shows 5 generations of my family, including me, at her 100th birthday celebration." First article, "From the Big Three to Biotechnology, North Carolina Industries Over Time," by Roanne Bishop, who is the director of the Mountain Gateway Museum and Heritage Center. Within the span of a century, North Carolina has progressed from being a land of small farms with no electricity and only horse-drawn equipment to ranking as one of the top 10 industrialized states in the nation. Indeed, today's Tar Heel State is a national leader in banking, manufacturing, health services, technology, and other industries. How did that happen? And what can we expect in the future? Read on. That's what this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian is all about. For most of the 1900s, tobaccos, textiles, and furniture were the powerhouses of North Carolina's economy. These Big Three industries employed thousands of workers and represented millions of dollars in investments and foreign exports. But for various reasons, all three industries were in decline by the end of the year 2000. Fortunately, new technology-driven industries had started up by then, thanks to government support and the efforts of scientists and researchers in the state. Pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, information technology, microelectronics, and telecommunications are now helping to drive a more diversified economy that offers cleaner, higher-paying, and less labor-intensive jobs, as well as new products and services. With the world-renowned Research Triangle Park situated in the Raleigh-Durham area, many top-flight universities nearby, and other research complexes located in Charlotte, Greensboro, and Rocky Mount, North Carolina seems well-positioned to explore possible future industries, such as robotics and space travel. But the Tar Heel State wasn't always so fortunate. Lacking good roads and deep water ports, and having little capital, colonial North Carolina did not initially attract industry. Farm families made, grew, or raised most of what they needed, and traded or sold any surpluses within their local community. Almost all early industries that did develop were dependent on natural resources. Tobacco, a crop introduced to early settlers by Native Americans, grew well in the sandy soils of the Piedmont and Coastal Plain, and quickly became the colony's primary export. Longleaf pine trees made North Carolina a world leader in the production of naval stores, that is, tar, pitch, and turpentine, during colonial and antebellum times. The discovery of a 17-pound gold nugget in a Cabarrus County creek marked the beginning of the state's gold mining industry in the early 1800s. North Carolina's textiles industry, which arose during the 1820s, was based on cotton. Lumber and furniture production both relied on native hardwood forests, and the state's centuries-old pottery tradition, part of the folk arts and crafts industry, was grounded in red clay. Thus, North Carolina long remained an agrarian, or of relating to farms and farming, society. The American Industrial Revolution in the late 1800s helped shift North Carolina's focus away from raw materials, which it had for so long simply harvested or extracted or shipped elsewhere, toward manufacturing, mechanization, and a new factory-based workforce. The Tar Heel textiles industry was the first to change, moving from water and steam power to electricity during the early 1900s. Electricity eliminated the cotton mill's belt-driven machinery, which had often contributed to accidents and shutdowns, while providing better lighting and humidity controls. Increased demand for textiles during World War I boosted the industry. By 1923, North Carolina had become the nation's leading textile producer. World War II further spurred the industry. About the same time that North Carolina's textile industry began to boom, its furniture industry also took off. An agricultural depression during the 1890s forced many farmhands to take jobs in developing towns. Fledgling furniture factories took advantage of these unskilled workers, who also needed furnishings for their new urban homes. The High Point Furniture Manufacturing Company, the state's oldest furniture business, began production in 1888. Other furniture factories soon sprang up along the North Carolina Railroad corridor in cities such as Lenoir, Hickory, Thomasville, and Lexington. By 1939, the state was the nation's leading manufacturer of wooden household furniture. The opening of High Point's Southern Furniture Exposition eventually created the largest marketing center for home furnishings in the world. But tobacco was North Carolina's blockbuster industry. It soared after the Civil War when former Union soldiers created a demand for the mild-flavored smoking tobacco they had sampled during wartime. Washington Duke of Durham was the first to take advantage of the demand and began large-scale tobacco manufacturing. But others soon followed, including R.J. Reynolds in Winston-Salem. James Bosnack's 1884 invention of a cigarette rolling machine revolutionized the industry. And by 1890, when James B. Duke took the helm of the American Tobacco Company, North Carolina's tobacco industry had become recognized internationally. The name of that inventor was James Bonsack. The Big Three continued to power North Carolina's economy through the mid-1900s. By the century's third quarter, these industries were facing challenges. Health concerns about smoking prompted congressional hearings and a wave of civil lawsuits that hammered the tobacco industry. In the 1900s, free trade agreements and globalization created tremendous competitions for the state's textile mills and furniture factories. Consequently, some companies closed while others moved their operations abroad. Environmental concerns about industrial air and water pollution also dealt heavy blows. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138.